and said a prayer of thanks for him. She wandered out into the kitchen, found a half-empty bottle of wine she had opened the weekend before, and poured herself a glass. She carried it out into the living room and considered turning the television on, but remembered there was never anything good on Friday nights. Instead, she sat on the couch, kicked her shoes off, and enjoyed the silence. "I believe I could drift off right now, and not wake up until I hear the pitter-patter of his little feet." Out of the corner of her eye, she noticed a blinking red light on her answering machine. She tried to ignore the light. "It'll still be there, blinking in the morning." She took a long sip of wine and laid her head back. Vivian Hanrahan was not a woman who could let a blinking red light go unchecked, though, even with a little wine in her. She dropped her feet off the coffee table, walked to the little side table that held her cordless phone and answering machine, and pushed the playback button. "You have one message," the automated voice said, followed by a beep. Then a long hiss of static before Cyrus Creech's voice came on.
"Vivian! Cyrus!"
His voice was choked but exhilarated.
"It worked! By God, it worked!"
Another long burst of static.
"After you left, Byron slept for hours. His vitals didn't change, but here's the miracle. When he woke up, he said he was hungry. Hungry! He hasn't been hungry in months. The doctor's going to come look at him again in the morning, but we can see. There's life in his eyes again. I don't know how, but that little boy of yours is a walking miracle. Proof of God's works in our world."
Another pause, as the tape wound quietly on the microcassette in the answering machine. When Cyrus continued, he was quieter.
"We're going to stay here in Little Rock until things get sorted out. I have a feeling we'll be bringing Byron home with us when we come. Alice asked me to tell you, thank you, thank you, thank you for bringing our boy back. I don't have to tell you what it means to us."
A long beep signaled the end of the message. Vivian pushed erase on the recorder, picked up her glass of wine, and walked to Nathaniel's bedroom, a typical 4-year-old's bedroom. There was a He-Man and the Masters of the Universe poster above his bed, edges curling. A toy box overflowed with Stretch Armstrong and G.I. Joes, an Etch-a-Sketch and Hot Wheels cars, a bookshelf filled with well-loved picture books. Not the bedroom of a new messiah. "Just a boy," Vivian said quietly, before crossing the room and pulling up the blankets Nathaniel had kicked off in his sleep. Standing once again in the doorway, looking at a small sleeping form, she came to a decision. "I'll do whatever it takes, Nathaniel, so you can have a normal life. Whatever it takes." The following week was wonderfully normal for Victoria at Creech coat and uniform. Mr. and Mrs. Creech and Byron stayed at the children's hospital for the week while the doctors ran batteries of tests, looking for answers they would never find. The end result was the same. Byron was once again a healthy child, with a happy smile for everyone who came to visit him. The Creeches didn't mind the delay. They were content to be a family and spend time together. At the factory, life went on as it always did. Vivian kept her ear to the ground to see if there was any more talk of miracles and unexplained cures, but aside from some employees remarking how wonderful it was that Byron was on the mend, all was quiet. Nathaniel's name never came up. Vivian stopped worrying about it for the moment and focused on smoothly running things until Mr. Creech returned. When Cyrus did make it back, the middle of the next week, the first thing he did was make a quick trip around the manufacturing floor, theoretically checking materials, but really accepting well wishes and congratulations. The second thing he did was summon Vivian to his office. She sat down across from him, notebook in hand. Before he spoke, Cyrus raised his hand to indicate silence, walked over, and closed the door. When he sat back down, he smiled broadly and said,
"The doctors can't explain it, but they've given Byron a clean bill of health. They may not understand it, but we do, don't we?"
His entire attitude spoke of a happy conspiracy between them. Vivian shifted in her chair, took a deep breath, and tried to decide how to proceed. Before she could, Cyrus said,
"This is big, really big, bigger than any of us."
He stood and started to pace behind his desk.
"Have you talked to your pastor about your boy and what he can do?"
"We don't attend church." Cyrus stopped in mid-step and turned toward her.
"Really? Oh, I just assumed."
"I understand. Here we are right in the buckle of the Bible Belt, so pretty much everyone goes to church or feels guilty about it. But we don't. We had a bad experience."
"At church? A bad experience?"
He shook his head.
"Well, we don't have any of those here. Would you be willing to bring Nathaniel in to meet with Pastor Michaels at my church?"
"No." Cyrus stopped, as if the answer had been a foregone conclusion.
"No?"
"That's right. No. Look, Cyrus, it was against my better judgment that we went to Little Rock with you in the first place. I'm glad that something changed, and that Byron is going to be fine. I'm thrilled. But the most important thing to me is to protect Nathaniel. I can't do that by traipsing him out to strangers like a trained monkey. If you really are grateful to us, please just forget we had anything to do with it."
She stood and closed her notepad.
"Is there anything else you need from me?"
Cyrus appeared stunned at this sudden turn of events. Mouth slightly ajar, he shook his head.
"Thank you. I'll be in my office if you need me. I put the production reports there in your inbox."
Vivian let herself out, but as she walked down the hall toward her office, her hands were shaking.
Chapter 7. That night, Vivian, Andy, and Nathaniel were settled in the living room. The adults were more or less watching an old black-and-white movie on TBS, and Nathaniel was staging a battle between his action figures and dozens of small green army men. The action figures were larger, but the army men had numbers on their side. Andy had once been only a babysitter, but over the past few years, she had evolved into more of a member of the family. It wasn't unusual for her to stay for dinner, and then to still stick around and watch television and visit with Vivian. For her part, Vivian was glad to have another adult to talk to. Nathaniel was a bright young boy, but he was still only 4, and more concerned with his toys than anything else. Andy was draped across the chair, not really watching the movie, but not wanting to go home to her boyfriend either. With a sigh, she slipped her legs off the arm of the chair. "Guess I might as well head for home. The longer I stay here, the worse it'll be when I get there." She paused. "Of course, if I wait long enough, he'll be drunk and passed out by the time I get there." Before she had a chance to even slip her shoes on, there was a knock on the door. Vivian and Andy exchanged a glance. Andy raised her eyebrows. "Are you expecting company?" Vivian shook her head slightly and went to the window. On the small porch, she saw Cyrus Creech and a man she didn't know. She turned to Andy. "It's just Cyrus and some other man. Wonder what in the world he wants now. Stay with me for a minute, will you?"
"Sure."
Andy knelt down and began picking up scattered army men off the floor. Vivian answered the door.
"Hello, Cyrus. You're full of surprises, aren't you?"
Cyrus looked a little flustered, but said,
"Hello, Vivian."
He gestured toward the man standing slightly behind him.
"This is Pastor Michaels. I apologize for dropping in unannounced like this. I hope you don't mind."
Pastor Michaels was tall and thin, with round glasses and a hawk's beak nose. Vivian cocked her head, but lacked the ability to be outright rude. She stepped back, opened the door, and said,
"Please, come in."
As the men came inside, she shook hands with Pastor Michaels.
"Pleased to meet you, ma'am."
He barely gave a glance to Vivian, though, his attention focused on Nathaniel, still scooping up army men. He kneeled down beside him and said,
"Hello, young man. I'm Pastor Michaels, but I'd like it if you'd call me Jimmy."
Nathaniel looked up from his cleanup duties and glanced at Vivian, who gave him a slight nod.
"Yes, sir."
He met and held Michael's gaze steadily.
You have very good manners. It's nice to meet you, Nathaniel.
He stood and dusted off the knees of his slacks. He looked at Vivian and said,
I really do apologize for barging in like this, ma'am, but I needed to see this miraculous young man with my own eyes.
He glanced sidelong at Cyrus, cleared his throat.
After what Cyrus told me, I couldn't help myself. I was so excited I called the bishop of our entire region, Bishop McAllister. He and I prayed about it, and we were moved by God to come and talk to you.
Well, Vivian said, looking sharply at Cyrus. No good deed goes unpunished. Cyrus looked at his shoes. And what is it exactly that you want to talk to me about? Something about my 4-year-old son, I would guess?
Well, yes. Bishop McAllister wanted to know if you would drive with me to meet him in Dallas tomorrow. He's really quite excited to meet Nathaniel.
Goodness, Vivian said, slipping into her recently acquired southern accent. Little Rock last week, Dallas this week. I'm becoming quite the world traveler. Cyrus stepped forward and said,
Take as much time as you need away from work. You're pretty much indispensable there, I'll admit. But the Lord's work comes before all else. We'll figure everything out, don't you worry.
Nathaniel looked at his mother. Vivian took a deep breath. Carefully, she said, I can see how important this is to you, and I understand how special Nathaniel is. It's hard for me, because I want to keep him all to myself. But I really do understand. She nodded. All right. If it's that important to you, I won't stand in the way. Reverend Michaels and Cyrus Creech beamed at her. Andy looked aghast. What time do you want to pick us up?
It's quite a drive to Dallas, especially if we catch traffic. Would 9 a.m. be too early?
Vivian looked beaten down, but resigned. No, that's fine. Shall I pack us a lunch?
Oh, no, Michaels answered quickly. The church will be proud to buy the two of you lunch. There's a Cracker Barrel just outside of Dallas. We can stop there, have some of their wonderful cornbread, and meet with Bishop McAllister by 3 o'clock. We'll be back here before Nathaniel's bedtime.
That's fine, then, Vivian said. We'll be ready to go. Pastor Michaels beamed at her again. It was obvious that this had gone much easier than he had anticipated.
Well, we'll get out of your hair, then, Cyrus said.
See you in the morning, Mrs. Hanrahan. And,
he paused and graced Vivian with his most sincere smile, the one that loosened up the tightest wallet when the collection plate was being passed.
Thank you.
He finally noticed Andy sitting off to the side, jauntily tipped a finger against his forehead and said,
Ma'am?
A moment later, they were out the door. Nathaniel moved to the window and stood on his tiptoe so he could see out. They look happy. Thought Pastor Michaels was going to jump up and click his heels for a minute there. He watched them get in Cyrus's Cadillac. The car started, the headlights turned on, and it pulled slowly away from the curb. Vivian turned around to a glare from Andy.
I can't believe you're letting those Bible thumpers mess around with Nathaniel. What are you thinking?
Vivian glanced at the clock. 8:30.
I think I've got 12 hours to pack up anything we want to take with us and get out of here.
Chapter 8. So, Vivian said, turning to Andy with a quick smile. What do you say? Want to stay up all night and help me figure out how to fit my whole life into a Chevy Cavalier?
You're leaving? Like, leaving?
I would never let them get their claws into Nathaniel. I was just trying to get them out of here as fast as I could.
But where will you go?
No idea. I was on my way somewhere when I broke down here. I would have moved on eventually anyway. I've always known Tubal isn't my ultimate destination.
Andy looked thoughtful. She was 20 years old, a cute redhead who had been born in Tubal and had rarely been outside of Union County.
The trip to Dallas had sounded like a major road trip. The idea of packing up everything Vivian owned and heading out for parts unknown dazed her. Vivian glanced around the living room, taking inventory of the couch, chair, and coffee table.
I got all this stuff secondhand a few years ago, so it's no big loss. Whatever we don't take with us, you can have. I'll give notice to our landlord while we're on the road, and we paid rent through the end of the month, so you'll have plenty of time to move whatever you want out. You can even move in here for a few weeks if you want some time away from Carl.
Vivian retrieved an empty box from the back porch and brought it to Nathaniel in his room.
We are going on an adventure tomorrow. We might not ever come back here. So I want you to pack whatever toys you love the most in this box, so we can take them with us. Understand?
Nathaniel looked at the box, perhaps 2 feet square, then looked at all the toys scattered around his room. Not much room, but there were always more toys. He shrugged and said,
"Okay, Mama,"
and went to work. Vivian watched him pick up one Army Man or Hot Wheels car, consider it carefully, then place it either in the box or back on the floor.
"Half an hour, Nathaniel, then it's off to bed with you, and whatever's in the box goes with us. Whatever isn't, stays here."
Nathaniel didn't even hear her. In his mind, he was envisioning future battles that would be fought with the toys he brought, and he wanted to make sure he got the right ones. He picked up a kneeling Army Man with a bazooka on his shoulder and said,
"We'll definitely need you,"
and dropped him in the box. Vivian walked back into the living room carrying another empty box and a roll of box tape. Andy sat cross-legged on the couch, a thoughtful look on her face.
"What would you think if I said I wanted to come with you?"
That brought Vivian up short.
"Huh? Your whole life's here in Tubal."
"My whole life?"
Andy laughed and ticked items off on her left hand. "Carl, not the best boyfriend in the world. He cares a lot more about SEC football, trucks, and going fishing than he does me. And I know he always will.
Job? My job is working for you.
When you go, so does the job.
Parents? Mom's dead, and Dad moved to Texas for work 3 years ago. I'm lucky if I get a phone call from him on my birthday." She pushed down a third finger, then paused.
"And you know what's really sad? I've lived here my whole life, and I can't even think of 4 things I'd be leaving behind."
"Well, if you're serious, you don't have a lot of time to think about it. Nathaniel loves you, and it would be so much easier if he didn't lose you right now, too. So,
wow."
Vivian shook her head.
"Crazy how things happen so fast.
A few hours ago, we were eating Hamburger Helper and trying to decide what to watch on TV.
Andy jumped off the couch.
"So does that mean I can go with you guys? I'd miss you both way more than I'll miss anything else in this town."
"Yes, of course you can come with us, your family.
But there's one other thing to think about. When we leave here, we leave everything behind. I don't know if they will, but Creech and Michaels might come looking for us, and I don't want to be found. That means no phone calls to old boyfriends or anyone else. Is that too much for you?"
Andy was quiet for a moment, thinking.
"I think Carl will miss me for about 2 days. Then he'll probably hook up with Missy over at the diner. I've seen the way he looks at her when we go in for lunch."
"Yeah, I get it.
If I had those guys looking for me, I wouldn't want to be found either."
Vivian opened her arms, and Andy jumped to her squealing.
"Oh, this will be so much fun. I've got to go pack."
"One suitcase," Vivian said. "We're not going to have much room. The Cadavalier doesn't have much trunk space. It's a lot more reliable than that old Merc that got me this far, though."
Andy nodded.
"Got it. Can I borrow it to run home? I don't want to walk through town carrying my suitcase."
Vivian tossed her the keys.
"See you soon."
Andy bolted through the front door and ran down the sidewalk to the silver Cavalier parked on the street. Vivian looked around the apartment.
"What do I have room for?"
In the end, she settled on photo albums, Nathaniel's baby book, his box of toys, and one suitcase for each of them. She looked at the small pile in front of the door and smiled.
"Pathetic, really,"
she said to herself. She peeked in at Nathaniel again, sleeping peacefully now.
"And none of that stuff matters."
Chapter 9. By 5 a.m., the car was packed, and Vivian carried Nathaniel, wrapped in a blanket, to the back seat. She had left it empty, so he could stretch out and sleep on the trip. She made a pillow out of their coats and laid him down. Andy rode shotgun, and Vivian slid behind the wheel. She started the car and took one last look at the little house. First house where I was ever on my own. First house with Nathaniel. Andy looked at her. You okay? The mist of memory cleared from her eyes. Yeah, let's face it. It was kind of a shithole. They laughed. She shifted the car into drive, and 2 minutes later, they were in the country. After a few miles, they hit a main highway and turned north. One tiny town after another appeared in the distance, then shrank into their rear-view mirror. Still no idea where we're going? Not really. Wherever the wind blows us, I guess. Creech might remember that I was on my way to Louisiana when I broke down here, so that's out. He knows I come from Minnesota, and I wouldn't go back there anyway. Vivian had never told Andy why she had left Minnesota, and she still didn't. So that leaves east or west. Any preference? Vivian smiled and looked at Andy. In school, I saw this picture once of an amazing lake. It's got the clearest water you can imagine, so you can see more than 100 feet down. I've always wanted to see it. What was it called? Crater Lake. I think it was in Oregon. She pronounced it as Oregon, with the accent on the last syllable. Sounds like the closest thing we've got to a plan. What do you think, Bug? How does Oregon sound? Nathaniel paused, as though he had actually heard of either Crater Lake or Oregon. In his head, he saw lives spread out before him, branching from many different paths. He was quiet for a few seconds, then said, Good. Vivian nodded. Then to the west, and Crater Lake it is. At 8:45, Pastor Michaels pulled up in front of Vivian's house. There was a brown paper bag beside him that had candy bars, Pop-Tarts, a six-pack of Coke, and an oversized handful of pixie sticks. He had no idea what a 4-year-old ate, or what that much sugar might do to a child stuck inside a car in a 4-hour drive, as he had no children of his own. He rolled the top of the brown bag over several times and sat it on the floor.
We'll keep that as a surprise if our miraculous boy gets antsy.
He sprang out of the car and took the steps up to Vivian's front door 2 at a time. He knocked, shaven a haircut, 6 bits, and waited. He knocked again, and this time noticed the slightly hollow echo from inside. After 30 seconds, he stepped off the porch and peered in the window. It was dark inside, but he could see a spray of newspapers, discarded boxes, and a lonely stuffed dog sitting on the floor.
Good gosh darn it, Michael said under his breath.
He ran back to his car and sped off. 3 minutes later, he was in his office in the church. Nothing is more than 3 minutes away in Tubal, Arkansas. He picked the phone up, dialed a number by memory, and said,
Hello, Cyrus, please.
A few moments later, he said,
She's gone.
Michaels heard heavy silence on the other end of the line.
What should we do? Creech finally said.
What we should always do, let's pray.
Michaels closed his eyes.
Almighty Father, thank you for the gift of this day and for bringing us into the presence of another of your miracles. We have felt moved by you to bring this boy into your grace so these miracles can be shown to the world. But he's controlled by a woman who is a non-believer. We seek your counsel, Lord, your direction. Bring the light of your understanding to us. Amen.
After a momentary silence on both ends of the line, in a subdued voice, Creech said,
Meet me tonight at my house. We'll see what we can do about this. That boy is a reflection of the glories of God. We can't see his gifts wasted.
By mid-morning, Vivian, Andy, and Nathaniel had 200 miles between them and Tubal.
Nathaniel had munched through a peanut butter and honey sandwich and a banana, and was happily letting his hand ride the waves of air out the back window. By lunchtime, they were in Fort Smith, Arkansas, and Vivian drove around until she found a branch of her bank. 15 minutes later, over the protests of the local manager, she had closed out her account and walked out with a wad of cash. The result of 4 years of cheap housing, only drinking cheap wine, and no other bad habits. She slid behind the driver's seat, waved the cash at Andy, and said, "Okay, we're not rich, but this will get us wherever we need to go. I've been adding to my go-to-hell fund for 4 years, a little bit at a time, and today's the day we say, go to hell." As they sped out of Fort Smith, Andy rolled her window down and yelled, "Go to hell, Arkansas." Chapter 10. Pastor Michaels pulled up in front of the Creech residence a little after 7:30. The Creeches lived in the nicest house in the nicest neighborhood in Tubal. In truth, the neighborhood wasn't all that much, but the house was a beautiful, two-story colonial. Michaels knocked on the door. Mrs. Creech answered and showed him into the den. Cyrus Creech sat behind a bigger, more ornate desk than anything he had at the factory.
"Come in, Pastor, come in, please sit down."
Michaels sat in the chair opposite and looked around the room. There was a lot of dark wood grain and pictures of the Creeches doing fun things as a family. A shot of them with skis and wind-burned faces. Another of them standing proudly beside a huge swordfish hanging from its tail. As well as the obligatory picture of Jesus hanging where Cyrus could see it from behind his desk.
"You have a lovely home, Cyrus."
"Thank you. So what are we going to do? Just let this whole thing evaporate?"
"I've thought about it all afternoon, but I'm coming up empty. What else is there to do?"
"There's always something to be done, if you've got enough drive and aren't afraid to commit."
"Look, Cyrus, I'm not sure what you're thinking, but the church can't be part of anything that's not completely above board."
Of course, that goes without saying. I would keep you out of anything like that."
Michaels shook his head.
"No, that's not what I mean. It's not a wink-wink-nod-nod kind of thing. I was excited as you were about bringing that boy to church headquarters, but she's his mother. What she says goes."
Michaels cleared his throat and looked out the window.
"I'm sorry, Cyrus, but I've got to go. I've still got a sermon to work on for Sunday."
Cyrus looked at him, disappointment etched on his face, but said,
"Of course. Thank you for stopping by. We'll just let it go."
Michaels nodded.
"No need to see me out. See you Sunday."
Cyrus didn't answer, but sat motionless at his desk for long minutes, his head bowed in prayer. Quietly, he said,
"What would you have me do, Lord? I am your servant."
He closed his eyes and waited for an answer. Eventually, he opened his eyes, scooted closer to the desk, and pulled his Rolodex close. He flipped through the cards and settled on one that said simply, "Security." He punched the number into the phone on his desk. As soon as the man answered, Cyrus said,
"J.R., this is Cyrus. I need you to come to my house ASAP.
Then hung up. He leaned back in his chair and put his hands behind his head to wait. An hour later, a late-model blue Buick pulled up in front of the Creech house. A man in his early 40s emerged from the car and walked up the sidewalk. He was the kind of man that anyone would have a hard time giving a description of 10 minutes after they met him. There was absolutely nothing remarkable about him, although that was somewhat remarkable in itself. Cyrus didn't wait for the man to come to the door, but opened the door and waited for him on the porch.
"Hello, J.R. Thanks for coming so quickly. I've got a challenge for you."
"That's why I get up in the morning. I love a challenge."
Cyrus handed him an envelope.
"There's your retainer. If you need more, let me know. This is of utmost importance, and I don't want to let money be the reason it doesn't get done. Understood?"
"Yes. What's the job?"
"It's a woman and her son. The woman worked for me until today. I need her found. Absolutely no harm can come to them, but I need to know where they are."
Creech handed a file over.
This is everything I've got on her. She left this morning, so she's got about a 12-hour head start on you.
J.R. opened the folder and looked at the black-and-white picture of Vivian Hanrahan. He riffled through the pages that were attached.
Looks pretty thorough, not a pro. Shouldn't take me too long to find her.
For the next 3 days, Vivian, Andy, and Nathaniel wandered across America. Andy, who had never been more than 100 miles from Tubal, was in heaven. She gawked at long, flat fields of waving grain, the hills and lakes of the Ozarks, and the endless string of truckers who honked and waved at her long, slim legs from high above. Nathaniel didn't care about anything, as long as they didn't run out of peanut butter or juice boxes. They spent their fourth night on the road at a small roadside motel in Kimberly, Idaho, a tiny town a few miles from Twin Falls. They were on the second floor of the motel. Nathaniel was already asleep when Vivian checked a small calendar she kept in her purse. She turned to Andy and said,
"Wait a minute, is today your birthday?"
Andy flushed.
"Yeah, I was hoping you weren't going to remember."
"Why?"
"'Cause we're on the road like desperados running from the law, and I didn't think it was important."
Another thought occurred to Vivian.
"Holy heck, it's not just your birthday. It's your 21st birthday. I don't care if we're being chased by a posse like Butch and Sundance. A girl only turns 21 once."
She scooped her keys off the nightstand.
"You stay here with Nathaniel, okay? I'll be right back."
15 minutes later, Vivian returned, swinging a brown paper bag.
"Come on outside. I found a couple of chairs and set them up."
Outside, on the small walkway that looked over Highway 30, there were two plastic lawn chairs with a small table and ashtray between them. Vivian set the ashtray on the ground, then reached into the bag like a magician pulling a rabbit out of a hat. She pulled out a 4-pack of Bartles and James wine coolers and set them on the table. Next out was a package of Hostess cupcakes and a lighter. Lastly, she retrieved a small twig she had snapped off a tree in the edge of the parking lot. She stuck the twig in one of the cupcakes and attempted to light it like a birthday candle. The 76 station had a good variety of wine coolers, but their supply of birthday candles was surprisingly low.
"Surprisingly," Andy agreed.
No matter how long she held the flame to the twig, it was too green to burn.
"Okay, you'll have to use your imagination. Make a wish and blow."
Andy looked thoughtful.
"I don't think I need a wish. For years, I had just wanted to get out of Tubal, and now here we are, in nowhere, Idaho. Wish granted."
Vivian twisted the cap off one of the wine coolers and handed it to Andy.
"Peach, huh?"
Vivian looked down at the bottle in her hand and said,
"Yeah. I might have overstated how good their selection of wine coolers was. It was this or beer."
"Excellent choice. And we both know peach spritzers pairs nicely with cupcakes." She devoured half a cake in a single bite.
"Mmm, that's good. Thank you, Vivian."
Vivian uncapped a bottle for herself, tapped bottles with Andy, then leaned back in her chair and stretched her legs out so her feet rested on the metal railing. Andy did the same, and they spent a quiet minute looking up at the stars and the full moon, which cast subtle shadows all around them. Without looking away from the sky, Vivian said,
"This can just be a vacation for you, you know?"
"What do you mean?"
"I don't know what's ahead for us. You don't know where we're going because I don't know where we're going. So if you want, we can drive on to Crater Lake. Then I can find a bus depot somewhere, and I'll buy you a ticket back to Tubal. Absolutely no hard feelings."
"And I would never see you or Nathaniel again."
Vivian considered that.
"Likely true. Although this life has taught me to never use the word never."
Her smile reflected the moonlight. Andy was silent for a long time before she said,
"Two things. I love you and Nathaniel. So I'm not leaving you. Second, this isn't my first drink."
"I would have guessed. I don't think many kids in small towns wait until they're 21 for their first drink.
However, it is your first legal drink, and that's something.
A car rolled by on the highway below.
Thank you. I appreciate you giving me the chance, but I really do want to stay with you guys.
We love you too.
They sat in silence for a few minutes, listening to the sound of a far-off car approaching.
Andy, I'm afraid.
I don't know how to stop Nathaniel from doing what he does. I don't really even want to. It feels wrong to be blessed with an ability like this and to hide it under a bushel basket. But I also don't want to have him treated like a freak or to have to pick up and run every time he fixes someone. We'll run out of places to run eventually.
He listens to you better than any kid I've ever seen. I think you just need to have a talk with him.
Maybe explain that he needs to talk to you before he fixes someone. We can even tell him why. He's so smart, he'll get it.
You're likely right.
Vivian drained her peach cooler, considered for a moment, but eventually twisted the cap off the second one.
I'll be peeing peach for a week, but what the hell?
Oh, one more thing to think about. Wherever we go, we're going to need new names. I don't want to make it too easy for anyone to find us. You should keep Andy, so Nathaniel won't be too confused. But we need a new last name for you.
You too? Vivian nodded, looked up at the moon hanging so low in the sky.
I've always loved the name Violet.
I think that's my name from now on. Violet Moon.
Violet Moon, Andy said, letting the words roll around on her tongue. She looked at Vivian, considering.
Yes, it fits you.
She drained the last of her first wine cooler, uncapped the second, and said,
There's something really weird I want to tell you. I don't think you'll believe it, but if we're going to be family, I don't think we should have any secrets.
Chapter 11
Well, now you've got to tell me. Vivian, who was now Violet, said.
And I already wish I hadn't said anything. A rueful smile played on her lips.
I have this terrible fear that after I tell you this, you're going to stick me on that bus back to Tubal, kicking and screaming.
Violet reached across the table and touched Andy's hand.
Family, remember?
Right. Okay. I've told you that my mom died 3 years ago, right?
Violet nodded.
The night she died, I wandered out of the hospital in a daze. My dad was so broken up that he wouldn't leave her, even though she was dead. I felt completely adrift. Mom was everything to us. It wasn't just that she handled everything, although she did. She took care of the money, did the shopping, planned and cooked the meals. The only time my dad had ever been in the kitchen was to grab another beer. But it wasn't that. We could figure out how to handle all that stuff, of course. I was a big girl, 18 at the time. It was so much more. I knew she wouldn't be there to help me get dressed on my wedding day or hold her first grandbaby. It was the hole she left in our family. It was like she was the sun, and Dad and I revolved around her. With her gone, we had no direction.
Of course, Violet said, although she had never experienced a mother like that herself.
So that night, as I stumbled out the front doors of the hospital, I lit up a cigarette.
I didn't know you used to smoke.
Oh, it was so much worse than just smoking. So, there I was, totally stunned and helpless, crying my eyes out, but doing my best to hide it. When this old pickup truck pulled right in front of me, it was this boy from town named Joey. It was a scumbag, but it was kind of cute. You know the type?
Only from movies. I had a pretty restrictive upbringing, but yes, I know the cute bad boy type. Go ahead.
Joey was more than just a bad boy. He was the worst kind of boy. And especially the worst kind of boy for a broken-hearted girl to run into right after her mom has died. I tried to brush him off, but Joey didn't brush off easily. He was a complete asshole. But he did have his charm inside, too, and it was on full display that night.
Long story short, I ended up getting in the pickup with him and going for a ride. You know how one thing leads to another? You are looking at Exhibit 1A for that concept.
Andy was quiet for a moment, lost in the memory. Violet stayed quiet, let her stay lost for a time. I told him what had happened, that Mom had just died, and he acted concerned. Then he said he had something that would make me forget all about the pain for a little while. We're all responsible for our decisions, and I know it, so it was my own choice. If it hadn't been Joey Fitzsimmons right then, it would have likely been some other bad boy the next day or the one after. I was primed and ready to lose myself, which I did. I knew what the right thing to do was, and I did exactly the opposite. I knew I needed to get out of that truck and go find my daddy and grieve with him, and that was just too damn sad.
A silent tear slid down Andy's cheek. Joey had this little tin of Altoids that he kept in his glove box. He said that was where he kept his big guns, and I needed something big that night. I told him he was absolutely correct, and I took whatever he gave me and washed it down with a hit from his beer bottle. It was warm. The beer, I mean. Gross.
Violet, who had been tearing up herself, laughed a little.
The things you remember.
Joey told me that by the time we got to the party he was going to, I wouldn't feel a thing, that it would all just fade away. Truer words were never spoken. I don't remember much of anything after that for a few years. It was like one big blackout.
Violet cocked her head. She was doing the math and things weren't adding up, but stayed silent to let the story play out as it would.
Everything I remember from those years is just like little flashes, and none of them were good. Let's just say that my standards for what acceptable behavior was fell to an all-time low.
She shook her head to clear the cobwebs of those flashes from her mind.
About 2 years after Mom died, I knew where I was headed, and I finally decided to do something about it. I went to Daddy and asked him for help. He didn't have a lot, but he paid for me to go to a rehab center over in Texarkana. It was good. 30 days there, 30 days clean, because I made sure I loaded up on the drive there.
Finally, Violet couldn't hold her tongue any longer.
I don't understand, Andy. By this time, you would have been watching Nathaniel for me. None of this fits together.
Andy raised her hand. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, please wait until all facts are presented before coming to a verdict.
Chastened, Violet sat back in the lawn chair and waited. I came out of the rehab center and moved back in with Dad. I was fired up and determined to do things right. I got a job at Dairy Queen, stayed away from all my old friends. Went to my outpatient sessions, I did it all. And you know what? Addiction is so powerful. A month after I got out of rehab, I went to my old dealer and loaded up again. But I made the mistake a lot of junkies make. I used the same amount I was using before I got clean. My body couldn't handle it.
She looked straight into Violet's eyes.
I overdosed. I died. I was alone in my childhood bedroom, so there was no heroic rescue, no Narcan, no anything. Except for oblivion.
Violet rubbed her arms vigorously. There was a sudden chill in the air. She didn't dare ask what happened next.
And then, Andy continued, I opened my eyes, and there I was, back on that bench in front of the hospital, smoking a cigarette. Joey Fitzsimmons pulled up in his old truck just like before. It was like I had started over, because I had.
She peeked over at Violet to see how she was receiving this confession, but Violet seemed lost in memories of her own.
At first, I figured that I had just killed myself the night before, and now this was my reward, that I was going to have to relive all the biggest screw-ups of my life over and over. This time, no matter how persistent he was, I told Joey to go screw himself, then waited for whatever was next. But what was next was nothing. I sat there a long time. Eventually Dad left Mom and came out and found me. We went home together. The weirdest thing was that all-consuming addiction, that terrible need I had felt, was just gone.
Andy drained the last of the peach cooler and set it down with a little more of a thump than she meant to, and jumped a little. I was still sad that Mom was dead, of course, but to me, it had been 3 years since she had passed. I focused on trying to help my dad, but he was too distant to reach. About a year later, he took a job in Texas. I think he just wanted to get away from the memories. To make ends meet, I got that same job back at the Dairy Queen. They were impressed that I already knew how to run the ice cream machine. Andy laughed again, and this time, it was a more authentic laugh, no bitterness. A few weeks after I started working at DQ, I took a break and walked across the street to the park to watch the kids play. That was when I met you and Nathaniel. You know the rest of the story. Andy leaned her head back against the webbing of the lawn chair. I have never told anyone any of this, because I knew they would think I was deluded. But it's the truth, and I wanted you to know it. So, you gonna send me on the next bus home? No, Violet said. She thought back to the night Dennis Dillon had strangled her, and how she had woken up the next morning as though it had never happened. She rarely thought of it anymore, because what was there to gain by thinking about it? Of course not. You know what, Andy girl? I believe you. This sincere expression of belief made Andy break down and cry an ugly cry. But it swept so much out of her that she was glad to have it gone. She wiped her tears away with the back of her sleeve and said, "You want to know something? After I met you and Nathaniel, I started to believe that maybe I was given a second chance just so I could help him. I still believe that." Violet laid her hand on Andy's and said, "Me too."
Chapter 12.
Nathaniel slept late the next day, which was a blessing to Violet and Andy, who had stayed up late into the night. By the time they got packed, breakfasted, and on the road, it was after 10 o'clock. All of which conspired to mean that they didn't make it to Crater Lake that day. Instead, they found a cute, lodge-like motel at Klamath Falls and stopped there. They spent the evening hiking along a fast, rushing stream that cut through the pines behind the lodge, inhaling the clean, cool air. Nathaniel led them on the hike, saying over and over, "I like this place, Mama," as he bent to pick up a crawling bug or interesting rock. Andy said, "You know, I like this place too. Everything here feels so different, like something out of a movie." She waved her arm in an arc, taking in the entirety of the forest. "Living in Tubal, I couldn't even imagine something like this was even out here." On the walk back to the room, Vivian picked Nathaniel up, kissed his cheek, and said, "I need to talk to you about something, honey, and it's really important. Get your good listening ears on, okay?" "Always. Even when you think I'm not listening."
"Okay, Mama."
"Do you remember when you fixed the man that had been hurt at Mama's work?" Nathaniel let his mind wander back. "That felt good." "Right." He nodded. "And the little boy you fixed at the hospital?" "I wasn't sure I could do it with the first man, but when I fixed the boy, I knew. He was harder, but it felt right, too." Another nod. Violet paused, still looking for the right words. "I want you to talk to me before you fix someone like that. Understand?"
"Why?" "It's not bad, Mama. They felt wrong, and I made them right."
"I know you did. It's not bad at all. Never think that. I don't think you could do something bad if you tried. It's just that other people can't do that. They can't fix people like you can."
"Why not?"
Nathaniel furrowed his brow.
"They can't?"
"No, honey, I can't. Andy can't. You're the only person I know who can.
because you are so special. So it's not bad at all, but before you do it, I just want you to talk to me first.
Okay, Mama.
Nathaniel lifted his arms, slid down, and ran ahead of them on the trail, looking for more weeds and flowers he could pick to make a bouquet. Violet looked at Andy and shrugged. No idea what sinks into him and what doesn't. The next day, they were back on their early rising schedule and pulled into Crater Lake National Park by 8:30 a.m. The visitor center wasn't open yet, so they drove on up a steep gravel drive until they found a place to pull over. They hiked up a small rise, and when they reached the top, the entirety of Crater Lake spread out before them. Violet and Andy were chatting about possibly changing their hairstyles when they saw the lake. The vast perfection of it mesmerized them and cut their words off in mid-sentence. Even the easily distracted Nathaniel stopped and stared. The three of them stood stock still, staring with their jaws slightly unhinged for quite some time. Violet turned to Nathaniel to see if he wanted to be picked up so he could see better, but saw that tears were running down his cheeks. Alarmed, she kneeled in front of him. Honey, what's wrong? Nathaniel just shook his head, causing more tears to run. He pointed out at the pristine water in the caldera. Look, was all he said. Violet swooped him up in her arms and held him tight. She whispered, I love you, Nathaniel, into his ear. They spent the next few hours circling the lake on the 30-mile loop road, stopping every few hundred yards to get a new perspective on the lake. They ate a picnic lunch of bananas and string cheese at a table warmed by the late summer sun. I don't know how I've never heard of this place, Violet said. Everyone should come here. Thank you for thinking of it, Andy. My one good idea for the trip. Everything else is on you now. Speaking of which, do I know where we're going next? Not a clue. We'll drive until we see a nice little town somewhere, and that will be it. I don't want to live in a city. I want Nathaniel to grow up where it's safe for him to play outside, and where he can have friends to ride bikes with. And where we don't have to worry about some religious zealot wanting to turn him into the poster boy for God. Yes, that too. They packed the remains of their lunch away, stopped at the visitor center, and watched a film about how Crater Lake had been formed thousands of years earlier, although it happened very recently in geologic terms, then hit the road. A few hours down the road, dark clouds rolled in, and heavy raindrops spattered against their windshield. Violet turned the wipers on, and they drove west through the pouring rain. Each night, they had pulled off the road by dinner time, since they had been in no hurry to get anywhere in particular. On this night, though, they grabbed hamburgers at a roadside drive-in and continued on. They drove alongside a lazy river that twisted through bucolic farm country, then up and across a mountain pass. Eventually, they connected with Interstate 5. Nathaniel gave up on the idea of a comfortable bed and lay down across the back seat, using one coat for a pillow and another for a blanket. As the clock approached the witching hour, Violet saw an off-ramp ahead. I think that's enough of a trek for one day. Not sure what this place is, but it's got one thing going for it. We're here. They took the exit, curled around, and saw lights twinkling in a valley below them. They dropped down toward the warmth of the lights. As they drew near, they saw a green and white sign. Middle Falls, Oregon. Population 41,261. Middle Falls, Violet said, rolling the name around on her tongue, trying it on for size. I didn't see the beginning falls or the ending falls, but apparently we found the Middle Falls. She glanced at Andy, still alert in the passenger seat. How's he doing back there? Andy glanced into the back seat. Out like a light. Let's drive around and see what Middle Falls has to offer. They drove toward the brightest lights until they found downtown Middle Falls, such as it was after midnight on a weekday. The normal businesses were present and accounted for,
Rexall Drugstore, Liquor Store, Law Office, Accounting Firm, Veterinarian's Office, Movie Theater, and Bookstore. All were closed and dark at this time of night. There was no sign of movement anywhere.
Quiet, Violet said, then added, That's a good thing.
At the end of the block was a Safeway grocery store, also dark.
I guess if you live here and run out of milk at night, you're just out until the next day.
They turned away from the business district and drove through several neighborhoods, mostly single-level houses with small yards. Most of the driveways had 5 or 10-year-old cars or trucks sitting in them. Violet drove toward the edge of town, past a bar called the Do-Si-Do, and spotted a motel with a vacancy sign lit out front. Violet turned into the parking lot, turned off the engine, and looked at Andy.
Kind of an anonymous-looking little town, which ain't all bad for someone looking to stay anonymous.
I like it. It's cute, and it's a lot bigger than Tubal, Violet nearly said.
Every place is bigger than Tubal.
But instead she smiled and said,
I think maybe we're home.
The phone rang on the desk in the home office of Cyrus Creech. He picked it up on the second ring.
Creech!
Creech, J.R.
I thought it was about time I'd hear from you.
Yes, sir. Unfortunately, I don't have much. I bribed a girl who worked at the local branch of her bank to look up her account. She closed it up in Fort Smith, the same day she left Tubal. She had a balance of...
The sound of papers rustling as J.R. looked for the number.
A balance of $3,822.48. After that, she disappeared. No sign of her. We put out a nationwide trace on her vehicle. No sign of it anywhere yet. If she sells it, or so much as gets a traffic ticket, I'll know about it within 24 hours.
What else?
Not much, unless you want me to randomly hire people to go to different parts of the country showing her picture. That's a needle in a haystack, and gets expensive very fast.
Do this. Put one more man on the team, looking for her. It's important, and I'm willing to pay the freight.
Yes, sir, will do. I'll call you next week.
Creech hung up the phone and looked across at his wife.
Why go to all this trouble? Alice said. Especially after what she and her little boy did for us. They obviously want to be left alone.
Why not let them live their life, and we'll live ours? That would feel selfish. He saved our son, but we let them allow other children to die when they could possibly be saved.
It's obvious that they don't want to live that life.
Heal the sick, raise the dead, cleanse lepers, cast out demons. You receive without paying, give without pay.
Matthew chapter 10, verse 8, Cyrus said.
Each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver.
2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7, Alice retorted with a grim smile.
Let's not have a biblical argument. You know I always win those.
Cyrus grinned ruefully.
You're right about that, my dear. But not about this. When I think of the gifts that child possesses, the idea that God gave him so much, and that he would squander it, it's impossible for me to allow.
He reached out for Alice.
You have a good heart, and I know you only want the best. That's what I want, too. Even if a little persuasion is needed.
Chapter 13 1989 Miss Haywood finished writing The Oregon Trail on the blackboard, then turned to the class. Miss Haywood was in her 40s, with brown hair that was showing the first signs of gray, which was pulled back into a severe bun. She never wore makeup, and had worn the same style cat's-eye glasses since college. She believed they would eventually come back into style.
"We'll finish our history studies for the year with the Oregon Trail. Who can tell me where the Oregon Trail began?"
Mary Billings raised her hand, but Miss Haywood patiently waited. Mary always raised her hand, and most times Miss Haywood ended up calling on her. Still, she always hoped one of the other students would perhaps look the answer up and give her another choice to call on.
The fifth grade class of Middle Falls Elementary only had another month of classes, and the hearts and minds of many of the children were already directed outside.